Hi and welcome back to Brutally Honest with me, Jermaine Pennant. Today's guest is from the series BBC This Country, starring Daisy May Cooper, Charlie Cooper and her dad, Paul Cooper, who I'll be talking to in today's episode. So, Paul, thank you for coming on and welcome to Brutally Honest. Really appreciate you coming on and taking the time out.
Well, thank you, Jermaine. It's a real honour to be on. Thank you for asking me.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, I'm going to talk about your charity first of all. The Alliance Foundation?
Children's Football Alliance.
Yes. Brilliant. People might not know this, but I played in the charity game against Swindon. It was This Country versus Swindon Town Legends. I just want to say that your acting is better than your goalkeeping.
That's not hard. Only just.
No, it was a great day out, great game, big crowd. Enjoy it. Thoroughly enjoyed it. I did. It was for a good cause. And we're just speaking before, and that it was the best one yet. Please tell us, dive into it.
Yeah, so we had 60 children from 20 countries. So 15 kids from a special school in England. Then there was 20 kids from Prague, and the rest were refugee children that were based in Belgium, so from Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Morocco, you know, from all over the place. And so it's 14 to 16 years age group, and it's half boys, half girls. So they're there for a week, and it's basically everything we do revolves around the Flanders Peace Pitch, which was a venue for the Christmas truce in 1914, Christmas Eve, when the Germans and Allies met in no man's land. With all that horror and slaughter going on, they decided to have a game of football, and it was kind of, I think, you know, it's a common language. They might not have been able to speak the same language, but they spoke a common language, you know. It's amazing kind of researching actually that. And funny enough, of Liverpool, there was a story of two soldiers, because a lot of apparently Germans lived in England before the First World War. And there were two people met in no man's land, one in the German army and one in the British army, that used to play football in an amateur team in Liverpool. So all these people were kind of meeting, you know, because they knew each other, which is quite extraordinary. So how the kids get there is that we twin pitches around the world with the Flanders Peace Pitch. And so kids come, from around the world, and it's a whole week. So we play football, but kind of jumpers for goalposts stuff, you know, a bit like they would have done, you know, in the First World War in no man's land. And we play cricket and touch rugby games, other games that would have been played in Britain during the First World War. They go on bike rides. We do art graffiti workshop, drumming workshop. And then we take them on kind of a war walk, a First World War war walk. And then they go to cemeteries and museums, you know. And it's a fantastic week. The kids just bond. So by the end of the week, they've got friends for life, you know, and they communicate wherever they are in the world. And it really is quite moving seeing, you know, how the kids get on so much. So it's kind of peace education.
It's powerful how much football brings people together. It's like a universal language and sport, and it can, through football, you can get friends for life and, you know, really take you out of any darkness and bring you into the light. It's a great sport, football. It's for, I would say, that the middle class as well, so people can enjoy it and relate to it.
Yeah, and I mean, our mantra is, if you can have a game of football against your enemy during World War, anything's possible.
Yeah.
And looking back, there was also, I was looking recently about, there was a big, the general strike in Britain in, I think it was 1921. And it was, you know, ferocious between the strikers and the police. And the government apparently knew that the strike would end because the police started having a game of football with the strikers, you know, again. And they found that common ground. And the government said, right, they're getting on now, so it will end. So it's bizarre. And many of the pictures we have are in kind of, you know, conflict areas, or have been in conflict areas. So you know, there's a pitch on the border of Pakistan and India, in Kashmir, which is obviously very tense. We've got one in Hong Kong as well. That was obviously all the problems going on there. And there's also one we're doing in Israel, which is a project with Israeli Jewish and Arab kids. So again, they come together. Football is that catalyst, you know. It's amazing.
I would love to know who won the match in the World War game.
People said, from what I understand, it was the Germans 2-1.
They didn't go to penalties then.
Penalties. Just imagine, you got 5 minutes left, God. Right, penalties.
Oh, brilliant! But
apparently,
brilliant.
there wasn't just one Christmas truce. It was all, you know, the kind of front was 300 odd, you know, miles, and there were different Christmas truces, and there were different games of football, and also the next year there was another Christmas truce, but it wasn't as big, and I think No Man's Land probably had been pretty much obliterated by then, so very difficult to have a game.
Yeah, brilliant. I just want to touch on, let's dive back now a few, well, many years. This country, your daughter Daisy May wrote it. You play a part in it as a father, Martin, and your son Charlie also plays in it. We've just been watching it before you came on. Me and Jess, we love it. We think it's absolutely amazing. It's so, so funny. And if anyone hasn't seen it, it's called This Country. It's a mockumentary. It's brilliant. It's definitely one to watch. Daisy speaks about how she's always wanted to get into acting, and it was hard growing up, and your battle to maintain that. How hard was it?
Well, we were doing very well when they were young, and I had a really good job, and I had a 5-bedroom house, and then I was made redundant, lost everything. We lost just, you know, and we were living in a 2-bedroom rented place, which I'm still living in. This is my daughter's place, by the way, completely different. So it was kind of tough. We had absolutely no money, and the kids were, you know, they had to share a room until they left, sometimes one of them would go down on the sofa, and they didn't leave till their 20s, because the struggle to actually bring, you know, this country to light. Daisy, you could see, was going to be a talent from about the age of 2. She just had it. It's like I'm sure you were kind of running around kicking a ball at 2, you know, and you could just see she just had this thing. Charlie went a completely different route. So we always had, you know, we always knew that she would make it. It's just, you know, the cream always rises to the top, I think, if you're good enough. But it's a long road with many hurdles, you know. And Charlie, talk about chalk and cheese between them. Daisy went to RADA, which is kind of like, you know, going to Liverpool Academy, you know, the kind of equivalent, and absolutely hated it there. You know, she couldn't be kind of tamed, and I think they try and kind of change you. So she wanted to kind of leave, and so we said to Charlie, you know, you always wanted to live in London. Can you sleep on her floor? She's got a tiny little room, you know, in the student quarters. And they had no money, so they could never go out. In fact, they used to go around stealing food for the fridges, everyone else. They just had nothing. And they started to talk about home and the characters, you know, based in Cirencester, is where we lived, although, you know, North Leech was this country was based in a kind of, you know, village, large village. And the characters really kind of developed from that. So all the characters in this country are all from around Gloucestershire. In fact, I try to avoid some of them, especially, I mean, Mandy lives on our estate. It's got a big dog, you know, and tattoos. And we had a do the very first this country. And there was like a kind of question and answers after it came out, the first series. And she was there in the front row and she stood up and said, "I'm the real Mandy."
So she never came my character. Yeah.
She's actually more scary than the Mandy on TV.
Brilliant.
So it came out of, you know, it's that all the characters are basically, you know, from the area, you know. And I think no matter where people have come, they've always said, "Ah, you know, my village, my town, you know, is exactly like that. That's my kind of life growing up, you know."
That's the thing, watching it, I think every village can relate to it, because it is, there's no bullshitting, there's no, you know, sugarcoating. That's how it is, and that's how you, yeah, when you watch it, that's why a lot of people can relate to it and probably find it so funny, because it's so real. But obviously people watch it and seen it and love it and probably think, oh, this was an easy road. It was nothing but short to actually get this going, and the knockdowns and the setbacks and the hard work to get this coming from nothing was, you know, really immense.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it took Daisy left Rada and managed to get an agent, and she got 20 seconds in Doc Martin. So that was the only thing she'd done. She rang the agent to see you know, if she'd get more work. They sort of said, "Daisy, who? I don't think we know you." She said, "What? You're my agent." So she said, "The only thing we could do is write something around me." So, I mean, and Charlie, to be fair, all he was doing at the beginning was making sure she was all right and was just doing the typing while she kind of talked. And then he kind of started to come up with ideas. So by the end, you know, by the time they actually wrote the first series, you know, they were doing, it was 50-50. And, but he'd never acted. And they went to, they were picked up by Universal, you know, the huge kind of, you know, American company, to do it for ITV. And they just changed it. And we'd go off to America every night, you know, for the script to be read, what they'd written in the day. "Oh, no, you can't say that. You can't do this." So it was so watered down. When they did the pilot, which has never been seen, and Daisy and Charlie said, "It never will. No one will ever see the pilot." And it was different, you know, Charlie wasn't in it. And so Universal sacked the kids, and, you know, ITV said, "This isn't what we signed up for." I feel sorry for ITV, because, you know, it was really what, you know, the kids' kind of idea. But they learned from that. Don't fail by someone else's work. We just failed by ourselves. So Daisy said, wrote to Shane Allen, head of comedy at BBC, and said, "I'm going to stand outside your window and sing really badly until you give us a series." So he said, "All right, you can have a series." So they went straight in. They said, "Well, who are we going to get play the, you know, the part, the male part?" And Daisy said, "You know, well, Charlie, you know the part inside out. Try it." So that was the first time he'd ever acted, was the first scene in the first episode. And he was a really quiet, shy, reserved, you know, guy, you know, much different. Sorry, phone going off. Very different from Daisy, who's, as you can see from the football, extremely extrovert. So chalk and cheese, you know. So I think that worked, you know, but it took from Daisy having the first idea to actually getting it put on was 8 years. And so in that 8 years, you know, they couldn't work. They just had to keep going. So we just kind of supported them and said, you know, just keep writing, and just, you know, it'll happen in the end. And eventually it did.
I say that's it's a great thing that as a parent, you've never given up even through them bad times. And people listen to this podcast, hopefully can relate to that and know even when they're in a dark place or that their children are trying something, just stick by them. And if they've got a vision, believe in it. And that dream is always there. Never give up, always believe. And, you know, if you put your mind to it, you can make it work.
Yeah, I totally agree, Jermaine. I mean, it was just encouragement and just having that faith. And I think people get kind of scared and think, you know, and we just had nothing. You know, we were literally surviving on, you know, fresh air. And just praise, you know, just praise, you know, finding something right that they've done and knowing that they're going to do it, you know, and we had faith all the way through. And I think the danger is, isn't it? Is oh, well, get a job, then you get a job, and then you move out, go into a flat, and then you know, then you need to keep up the payment so that you don't do the acting, and you get on that kind of conveyor belt, you know. So we kind of thought, no, let's just go with, you know, just go with it. So they were in. I mean, they were having to share a room into their mid-20s. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you know, because it was a two up, two down, you know, I mean, there was nowhere else to go. They, you know, they couldn't afford to rent anywhere or stay, you know, they had a bit of light relief if one had a boyfriend or girlfriend at the time, but you know, that was the deal, you know?
Yeah. Never mind the listeners, me listening to this story is giving me motivation and to go on and do whatever I want to or put my mind to and I can achieve it. It is great. I just want to talk about this country that the characters, I don't think you could have picked better characters. Everyone plays it amazingly. And you say that Charlie wasn't really an actor, wasn't interested in it, never done it before. It's probably one of our favorite characters in it. It's amazing. It's like Dr. Walter. You wouldn't think that at all. It's amazing.
Yeah, he is extraordinary. I mean, anything he kind of does, he kind of picks up really, really quickly. You know, kind of fishing he's been doing for a couple of years, and suddenly he's brilliant at fishing. And, you know, he used to be in a band. I played guitar for about 40 years. And he picked up my guitar and started strumming it. And within a year, he was a better guitarist. So he's, and now he's kind of, he's got his own place and he's doing a lot of DIY. And he's, I've never taught him anything. He's never done anything. So he just picks it up and seems to go with it. You know, he's tremendous talent. And it is now kind of writing, you know, has done, you know, they've gone in their kind of opposite directions, you know, for a while. I think they probably killed each other after the third series if there was a fourth. Especially poor Charlie, you know, having to drag Daisy to kind of write, you know, and, can I go and have a coffee first? And, you know, poor bloke went through absolute hell. But yeah, he's extraordinary. He keeps surprising us, you know. He's a real dark horse, you know. You know, we never in a million years would imagine that he would act. It's the last thing I thought he would ever do.
Yeah, and sorry, you got to tell as well, Daisy, she's got to take full credit for writing it. And what an amazing script. And if my memory serves me right, she's also planning a new documentary or mockumentary, if that's true.
Well, she's done. She's been in a couple of things that she's, but hasn't written. So she was in Avenue 5, and she was in, what was the thing recently? Witchfinder General. But she's written a new with a friend who was at RADA, Celine, and they've written this. It's quite a dark, but it is a comedy. Is it a mockumentary? No, it's kind of, it's really difficult to put it in any genre. And I think it, you know, as this country was, this is going to be absolutely groundbreaking, you know. So that, I think, comes out round about September time. And then
oh, that's
she's
soon.
got, yeah, I think it's going to come out about then. And that's called, I can't even remember what it's called. I can't remember what it's called,
yeah.
But it's funny, but it's dark as well. So she's off on that. And Charlie is writing a film, comedy film at present, you know, and he's been in, you know, a couple of kind of dramas and stuff. So he's kind of kept busy, but they're very different the way they write and everything, you know, and I think they'll eventually come back together and, you know, do some writing in the future. But I think, you know, they'll be doing other stuff. Yeah.
That's amazing. You must be such a proud father, and, you know, and reaping the rewards and seeing your children blossom the way they are. Full credit to yourself. So what's in store for you with the charity moving forward as well? Are you going to be involved in any of the projects that Daisy and Charlie are going on?
Well, Daisy says I'm going to be in the next, in not the one that's coming out September, but she's writing another one at present. So she says I'll be in that. And I think I'm, you know, probably get a part in Charlie's. I'm in a few little things. I've been in a really good film, actually, quite a small part called The Fence, which comes out, I think, again, at the end of this year. And that's 80s, based in the 80s. So I think it's going to have a real cult following, a bit like This Is England. You know, I think it's going to have of resonance. And I play a real dodgy guy who owns a scaffolding company and is a bit of a crook. So I seem to be getting these kind of parts now where I'm a bit of a kind of, you know, after Martin Muckler, a bit of a kind of crook. So, and I'm also just done a pilot with a guy called Joe Sims, who was one of the main characters on Broadchurch, so who's a Bristol. There's a real good scene going on in Bristol, which is just up down the road. So, you know, I'm doing bits and bobs there. So
it sounds like you're busy.
Yeah,
brilliant,
yeah.
Brilliant,
so
brilliant.
I've got a full-time job, then I do the acting, and then I'm also, you know, director of the charity. So we're off again with a charity in September for a week with another global peace game. So it's pretty busy.
Absolutely amazing. I would say I'll play a bit. My hamstrings have gone after the last game.
Well, you did all the work. You were taking the other 10 players. We were just watching you.
Oh, no, it was great. I just want to touch on, obviously, in the early years when you were struggling to finance me and obviously keep Daisy in acting and keep pushing her, was there any stage during that where you just thought you wanted to give up, or you thought you had to give up, or was it always that drive to keep going?
Well, it nearly ended in tears because I was actually working in a school when the kids were over up in London, where Daisy was in RADA, and absolutely loved it, working in the inclusion part with centre with kids with you know, behavioral issues and social emotional issues. But when they came back, we just didn't have enough money, so I had to kind of try. And I went back into, I used to be in sales years ago and was absolutely crap at it, and I went into recruitment, which I find the most stressful thing, and it stressed me so much that I had a heart attack. And you're given 6 weeks off, and, you know, to recover, you know, before, you know, the money runs out, you know, from the government, whatever you've got, you know. And we made the decision that, you know, my wife couldn't work at the time. The kids were still writing. So we made the decision that I'd go back in to that job that nearly killed me. And eventually, you know, kind of 6 months down the line, I got a job that I found less stressful. But that was the kind of decision. Well, you know, there's no money coming. We've got to pay the rent on the you know, the house. So yeah, I kind of went back into that job. You know, so that nearly kind of finished me. But we always had that faith that it was going to happen, and, you know, so, you know, it was that much sweeter when it did.
Yeah, I tell you what, Martin, you should take the plaudits for getting where, you know, Daisy's got to in the show, this country, because a lot of parents, you know, would look at it as we're struggling here, rather than continue to write, because we don't know if it's going to be a success or not. How about find a different job, a different avenue of work, and help the family? But you went out, tried your best and work and kept going on the writing, and to sit back now and be in a total better position. It's very brave, for one, and you deserve all the plaudits.
Well, I think, yeah, it's very kind of you to say that, but I think it's just, you know, I might have had opportunities in the past, but then got a job. And I was really interesting, listening to, read the autobiography of one of the early people in Dragon's Den, Ballantyne, and that really had a thing, because he said all the entrepreneurs were the kids that, you know, either got expelled from school or left school really, really early at the very, you know, kind of 15. And because you had absolutely nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And I think we were so far down and really struggling that there was nothing to really lose. And I think if you know, the job that I'd previously been in the house I'd been in, I think if we'd still been in that situation, I don't think this country would have been written. And I think it's all about, you know, the environment, and it just brought us so much more closer together. It's actually the best thing that's ever happened, was losing absolutely everything, you know, house, car, you know, we had no car or anything like that. We just had nothing, you know. So I think that was the best thing, because it just strips you back and you start from kind of ground zero. There's nothing, you know, you might as well go for it. Just have nothing to lose. And, you know, and I think that was really the catalyst, and it brought us closer together, you know, as a family. So,
yeah. It's a great way of putting it. You can be at your darkest times, at your lowest period or point in your life, but that may be the time to push, because like you said, you've got nothing to lose, and the reward you get for it would be amazing. Where if you're in a certain situation where you're not relying on something so much, you may be reluctant to strive for it and drive for it. But when you're at your lowest point, rather than looking at it being a dark place, there is light at the tunnel if you push forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's having that faith. And I think that you know, you've just got to do it and just hold your nerve, you know. But we knew that they had the talent and always had that faith. And I think it always actually kind of come, you know, the cream always comes to the top, you know. And it's not just the talent, you've got to have that kind of drive and determination. And I think because they had all those kind of 8 years, and they missed out on everything, you know, they didn't really have the money to go out and kind of party. They, you know, and all Charlie's friends went up to, you know, the kids he played football with in the football team, you know, they all went to live in London and Manchester and other places. He was the only one left, you know, so that was hard, you know, and he had the opportunity, he could have gone up with his mates and shared a flat, whatever, with them or whatever, you know, but he kind of stuck with it, really, you know, and it's paid dividends.
Well, when you see Charlie now, tell him I was impressed with his football skills, by the way. I thought he held his own.
poor boy. I was his coach. I was his coach from under sixes to under 18s. And then, at Cirencester Town, and then I was doing an adults team for a couple of years, and he played there as well. And because, you know, that kind of thing, that win at all cost mentality, where grassroots coaches always put their son up front.
Yeah,
I wouldn't let him play up front. And as soon as he left the team, he got, you know, he played a striker. So I had him as this kind of, everyone was playing 4-4-2, and, yeah. And we used to go out to Holland a lot and stuff like that. We were playing 3-5-2, and I had Charlie as this sweeper, this libero. And he was so skinny. He was even skinnier then than now. And people kind of, we used to get hammered quite a lot, but we played some great football. And this kind of, you know, Baresi kind of position he played. I think he was the only sweeper in the league. You know, what position he played then? That's not 4-4-2.
Who plays sweeper non-league? Brilliant.
And we kind of pass it in our own box for about 20 minutes, fantastic. Things like that, you know. Really fantastic. Frustrating. We were all small. They were all kind of small, and just the first 15 kids that came through the door we played with. So, you know, we're on a bit of a hiding, but we had so much fun. And funny enough, Charlie showed me the photographs that's the thing about football, is that, you know, they didn't win it. We never won anything or whatever, but all his friends, you know, they've all come back from everywhere, you know, once or twice a year, all the football team. And they all came back to Charlie's for a party the other day. And funny enough, there's about six of them have got kids now, and they're all boys. So I think it's going to be another team, and they're all about the same age. But that's football for you. The friendship has remained, you know, and you know, a couple of them are living in Australia, and they always come back, you know, once a year, and they have a kick about and stuff, and you know, just come and meet, you know, and chat and laugh, you know.
Yeah, it is a great bonding game. It's a great sport. I do love it. Do miss it as well. But you know, everyone listening to this podcast, I tell you, they hopefully do take inspiration from your insight, your journey, give them hope, because you know, do not give up on your dream, you know, no matter how hard or dark, because it's you push, you can achieve. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely, yeah. And your passion, you know, do your passion, you know, don't have a kind of, you know, you only get one life, it's not a dress rehearsal. Don't do something that you hate, you know. I mean, how many people are doing things that they just don't really enjoy? You know, just go out there and do it, you know.
Exactly. I never thought I could do this, but hey, here we are.
Well, and you do a bloody good job as well. It's a perfect job.
Thank you. Brilliant. Well, listen, time's running out, and I'm going to wrap it up here. I just want to say, Paul, listen, I've really enjoyed this, and look, amazing to hear your story as well. I know I'm taking something from this, but thank you for taking the time out, because I know these sometimes can be annoying, but thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, Jermaine. I really appreciate it.
No, I do. And say my hellos and byes to Daisy and Charlie for me.
Will do. Yes, will do. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, mate. Cheers. Really appreciate it.
So that's all from me from this week. Thank you for tuning in and listening. I really do appreciate it. It goes a long way. And a massive thank you to my guest, Paul Cooper. What a guy. As Paul and his family have shown, never, ever give up and stop believing. That's all from me, guys. Take care.